The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes, Thanksgiving week edition. We hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving. You'll be listening to this on Saturday morning, and I recorded the show on Wednesday afternoon, so I actually haven't celebrated my Thanksgiving as of yet when doing the show, but by the time you listen to it, I've already stuffed myself and have had a lot of football and fun and family around, so hope you had the same. And Saturday morning, I would have come in live to do the show, but instead, I jumped in the RV and I headed to Ross-Ade Stadium up in West Lafayette to watch the Hoosiers take on the Boilermakers for the old Oaken Bucket and hopefully a bowl berth. We'll see how that all shakes out. We've got a good show today. We're going to have Rod Holloway join us in just a few minutes to talk a little about the economy and the disconnect that may be out there and some of the different markets around the world and how the economies and markets are somewhat diverging. So look forward to that with Hot Rod. But beforehand, let's do a little news of the week brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. It's supported by Comprehensive Financial Consultants. To learn more about the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, go to mcshof.com. Or as I've been saying since I started reading this, just Google Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Much, much, much easier. The S&P 500 has closed at its calendar year high during the month of December, coming up soon, in 18 of the last 32 years. Of course, last year, the high in the market was on Wednesday, November 8th of 2017. A year of four years, 2017, of course, is the first year of Donald Trump's four-year presidential term. The S&P has been positive during just 11 of 20 presidential first years. And, of course, the S&P is up over 17% during the first year of Trump's administration. I found this interesting. 60% of the over a million foreign students study at American colleges in the last school year. Most of them come from China, India, South Korea, and Saudi Arabia. The question is, where do they go after they have been educated? Do they stay and contribute, or do they go back home? I believe most of them go back home. Americans filed over 150 million tax returns in 2015. 66% paid federal income tax, while 34% of the returns paid no federal income tax at all. 54% of American taxpayers reported under $50,000 of adjusted gross income back in 2015, and they did not pay any federal income taxes at all. But the 6.75 million tax returns in the year 2015 that reported at least $200,000 of adjusted gross income, that only represent 4% of the tax returns filed. They received 43% of all the adjusted gross income nationally, and they paid almost 60% of all the federal income tax that was paid nationally in 2015. Then finally, Zimbabwe rule, of course, in limbo. The president, who's like 170 years old or something, will not, he's actually 93, won't leave control, so they're going to try to get him out here pretty soon. But I always used to use Zimbabwe as a really good, I don't know what you want to call it, kind of a teaching moment, I guess, where I would pull out a piece of currency from Zimbabwe when they tried to inflate their way out of a mess, and they produced like these trillion-dollar bills. And anyway, I actually recently have had some people come to me and say, are they going to revalue the Zimbabwe currency and this $1 trillion really be worth something? No, that's not the way it works. It doesn't work that way with the dinar over in Iraq or any other country that's had their currency destroyed. So just a little word of advice. All right, when we come back, kind of talk you through my crazy, crazy last 3 or 4 days, and then we'll talk to Hot Rod Holloway on the economy, the markets, and what he believes is the disconnect out there, and is it anything we should worry about? We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I don't know about your week, but my week was very, very hectic. On Tuesday, I had a full day of appointments. Then I went and met with a client of mine and his grandson to talk about the financial planning field. He was considering getting into this field. So I always tell people, when you talk to me about getting into this field, I have an enthusiasm that is a little contagious. So I always say, hey, it's I'm going to make it sound a little bit better than it really is, maybe a lot better. And I'm going to make it sound like it's very, very easy. So it's not always that great, and it's certainly not that easy. So I had a good time, and I enjoyed that. So if anyone out there would like to learn about how to get into the business, if you have a young person in your family that's considering it, shoot me an email. I love to talk with them on the phone. I meet with probably one person, gosh, at least every month, just to give them the ups and downs and sideways of the business. So had a good week. That was a lot of fun. Then I went to the Edgewood, or I should say South Edgewood basketball game on Tuesday night, I guess it was. Yeah, Tuesday night, and that was a barn burner. Not really, but they tried. EHS really tried at the end. That was why I went, to see both schools play. Wednesday had a fairly light day to record today's program, and I met a friend before the IU basketball game. Then I went home because I had to prepare for Thanksgiving at my house on Thursday. We had it around 11:30 on Thursday at my house, and Glass asked me, how in the world do you have Thanksgiving at 11:30? What time do you have to get up to get things ready? And I said, well, not too early. I have a little trick. I mean, one is that I cooked my turkey in the Big Easy, which is a infrared cooker. It cooks about, 1 pound every 10 minutes, so you can get it done in a few hours, 2-3 hours, not a hard thing to do. Set it and forget it, kind of like a Ronco rotisserie cooker of days gone by. But then the sides, most of the sides, are going to be brought by a good friend of mine, Robert Evans. You may have heard of him. Some people call him Bob Evans, and he prepared all the corn, the green beans, and all the other fixings to go along with it. So we kind of cheated a little bit, but the Thanksgiving is easy. The cleanup's even easier, and then I can move on and go to my mom's. And then I'm going to go up to the – I went to Eastern Green football game, the state championship game on Friday. Of course, since I recorded this show on Wednesday, I have no idea of the outcome. I'm hoping that they went up there and pulled it off, but my guess is, just based on what I've read and what I've seen, and Eastern Green probably wouldn't have won last week if it wouldn't have been for the turnovers that they were able to get. So I'm going to say they're probably going to struggle and maybe not pull it off, but we'll see. So when you're listening Saturday morning, you'll find out if I was a predictor of high school football games or not. And then Saturday, that's why I'm not live in the studio on Saturday morning, loaded up and headed up to West Lafayette for the big bucket game. I'm looking really excited forward to that, and I think the weather's going to be great, so that's even better. And then I'll end up at church on Sunday. That sounds like a country song, doesn't it? How your week ends. And then next week, of course, the wrestling season starts around here, high school wrestling. Of course, my son is a wrestler at Bloomington High School South, and you've heard me talk about it many times, but he's a junior now, so time's going really quick. And next week they open up against Northview on Wednesday the 29th. And that is also alumni night. So I just ran a spot on the radio, a promo for that. So if you're an alumnus of Bloomington High School or Bloomington High School South Wrestling and you want to be recognized, we'll also recognize the past state champions. They call them the legends of the sport. We will definitely have a fantastic evening. So come on out if you have any connection with the Bloomington South Wrestling community, as I call it. It's like a big family. And enjoy a great night of wrestling. We have 7 seniors coming back this year. We had 10 kids make it to semi-state last year after winning as a team the sectional and regional. So, man, of course, it's my son, my son's team. But, come on out. It's going to be a great night. So hope all of you guys had a great Thanksgiving the way that I did. It was busy, but it was also very, very fun. And hopefully you come back Monday morning to the office or your place of work or whatever it is that you do, and you're fired up and ready to finish off the year in a strong, strong way. All right, let me go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Hot Rod Holloway. We're going to get into some economic stuff. We're going to talk about how I believe that the economies and the markets are somewhat diverging. The economies aren't saying exactly what the markets are. And this is including not just the developed countries like ours or over in Europe, but the emerging economies, which have actually been picking up steam, but yet their markets in some cases have been going the other way. So we'll take a quick break. We'll talk to Hot Rod. When we come back, this is Your Money with David Hayes. Happy Thanksgiving weekend to everyone. Hot Rod Holloway is on the phone with me now. And Rod, we're actually recording this show on Wednesday to play on Saturday morning. So I'm going to say this. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving with you and your family. And your answer is, I'm sure we did. So that's the way,
yeah,
that's the way it goes.
I plan on eating plenty, so I have no doubt that it'll be a good one.
There you go. Hey, well, real quick, I was doing a kind of a weekly update earlier this week, and I always do that based on the previous week's information. Talked about domestic stock performance. Kind of was up and down last week. The S&P Dow lost a little ground. NASDAQ posted a gain. How tax reform still remained the key focus in the markets. Investors are obviously questioning whether they're going to happen before the end of 2017 or not. But then Trump comes out and tweets, hey, Christmas present on the way. So we'll see if that happens or not. Going beyond the geopolitical debates, really we have some pretty positive economic updates to give people. We had retail sales that went up, consumer price increases slightly, industrial production went up. I know we had a negative number that came out today, I believe in durable goods, but I didn't pick up on that before we recorded the show too much. Housing starts beat expectations, both on new permits, construction starts, and completed homes. So obviously tax reform will likely continue to be the hot topic in Washington and the markets. We're going to follow, obviously, any changes and updates as they occur. And understanding the economy's underlying strength will be our main focus. It always has been. We don't make choices or moves based on what the news says. And, Rod, I think that's a real key for people kind of heading into the end of the year here.
Oh, yeah, most certainly, and especially when it comes to tax reform. Because the reality is, if tax reform does actually get passed, it's not just straight across the board every single company benefits. You know, the reality is a lot of the very large global companies are already paying far less than the 35% overall tax rate anyway. So it's not as though this is going to affect each and every single company. There are certain sectors it's going to affect more than others. Retail has been one that has been pointed out that predominantly a large majority of the retailers do pay a real effective rate of right around 35%. So if they get a tax cut, it's going to help them. Now, the dilemma in that is you've got Amazon on one side who has kind of given it to a lot of the retailers, and then on the other side, if tax reform goes down, how much does the lower tax offset this new demand in which people are choosing to order things online and not so much in the brick and mortar stores? And of course, the other area that a lot of people have talked about that will be benefited by tax reform, of course, is the smaller companies, the small domestic companies, the ones that aren't doing global business. So they don't have some operation in which they're doing business in an Ireland or someplace like that that has an ultra low tax rate that's reducing some of their tax burden while still paying at the higher rate here. They're paying all of it here. So there are certain selective areas. And that's where I think sometimes the talk of the tax reform, while I think it is very good and needed, I think sometimes in relation to stock market performance, it gets a little bit overblown.
Right now, when we look at the market, I was reading a Wall Street Journal article, and it said, no stock market bubble, but risk arising. I mean, obviously, risk arising. When you have price-to-earnings ratios that are up in the 20-plus range, you gotta have growth. You have to have things happen for this thing to continue to be good. I think I had a meeting just today, Rod, with someone that's like, you know, I'm afraid, but I'm afraid of missing out as well. And I think that's a common feeling when investors are feeling what they're feeling, which is they look at their statements, it's way up. They are nervous about what's next. And heck, I mean, who wouldn't be? But I think at the end of the day, understanding the risks that are in the market is probably the most important thing, because it's the things that you don't know exist are the things that worry us as portfolio managers and people that have been entrusted with folks, hard-earned savings. But talk a little bit about some of the known risks that are out there.
Yeah, sure. That's a great point, Dave, because I think it's real simple that people acknowledge the risk of the market going up and the market going down. Obviously, they're not afraid of the risk of the market going up. They're completely fine with that, other than if, you know, like you said, you're out of the market, then your risk is, hey, I'm not participating. It's more the downside. But it really is much bigger than that, you know, the overall allocation. What are the investments you're invested in? How liquid are they? You know, liquidity, I think, is an area of risk that many times gets overlooked. You know, there are people that take on illiquid investments. They're not bad. You know, there's nothing wrong with some illiquid investments. You just have to know and understand what the liquidity event is, when that potential event would happen, and make sure that you have more than enough liquid assets someplace else to offset that if a liquidity is needed for you before that illiquid investment comes in. So I think lots of times you look at that. The other thing, if you're looking at investments that are illiquid or even semi-illiquid, is what are you getting paid for that? You should get paid more to own an illiquid investment than you get paid to own a fully liquid investment. So those are areas. Of course, you've got interest rate risk. You know, we expect rates to go up. We've expected that for a few years. And here we are when we have conversations with Eric, our fixed income manager, and we talk about, well, hey, where were rates a year ago? Where were rates 2 years ago? The reality is we're not much higher, if higher at all, on a lot of the different levels of rates than we were, say, a year ago or 2 years ago. They have bumped up some. They made a run up to 2.5, got a little over that, done that a couple of times, and then have pulled back down. Now we're sitting somewhere bouncing in a range between about 235 to 240 on the 10-year. So while everyone has anticipated these rates going up, it's been extremely slow and even much slower than most of the experts have predicted. So, yeah, there are a lot of level of risk out there, and it's more so than just the market going up or going down, or that small caps are a little more risky than large caps. It goes straight across to all asset classes. It goes across the interest rate spectrum. It goes across the spectrum of liquidity versus illiquid investments. So there are many things that people have to be concerned with. And I think back to the point that you're making of people being fearful, but at the same time fearful to be out. Now is not the time to allow greed to take over. Meaning if you're a balanced portfolio, if that's what makes sense for you, your risk tolerance, your time horizon of your financial objective, then now's not the time to say, hey, you know what? I'm going up to 80%, 90% equity because this market's doing so good, and it appears as though there's nothing that can rattle this market and go down. That's the last thing you want to do. Matter of fact, what you really want to do is you want to evaluate where are you at today. You know, maybe you started as a 55-45 mix between stocks and bonds. Now you're up to 65-35. Well, you know what? Now would be a great time to take some of those profits off the table, move it over to the bond side, get that allocation back to where it is. So if you were originally comfortable with 55%, you should still be comfortable with 55%, even if it is a strong market. Because more than likely, when you first set that asset allocation of 55-45, you didn't do it thinking that the stock market was going down. You did it thinking that the market would hopefully go up, but you knew you needed balance because you were approaching retirement and you wanted to start preserving and protecting what you have already accumulated over all of those years of work and socking that money away. That's a very important thing that needs to be done right now. Take those gains off, because here's the deal. It's a low interest rate environment, but if you just picked up 30, 40, 50,000 in appreciation on the equity side, pull those dollars off, move them to the bond world. Bonds aren't paying more, but guess what? You just bought more bonds. So it's still a low interest rate environment, but now instead of owning 10 bonds, maybe you own 15 bonds in that rebalancing. You're starting to generate more income in preparation for that retirement.
Year to date, over 17% on the S&P, but Hot Rod, like you just said, most people, almost everyone, isn't invested 100% S&P. They're invested in a balanced portfolio, so they're looking at their account saying, well, I'm up 10 or 12 or whatever that number may be. That's actually, folks, pretty darn normal. Rod, also today I had someone say, what are my investments paying me? And what do you mean by that? What am I earning? Well, you aren't earning anything. What do you mean? Well, you've earned something, but you're not earning anything. So whatever your return has been, that's in the rearview mirror. What you're going to make forward has to do with how we do from here. So I can't say to you, okay, you're earning 7% or 12% or 2%. That's what you've earned in the past. And I think folks will look at their statements on their four. I know they do. I absolutely 100% know they do. They look at their statements and say, oh, well, look, I'm making, it's not I made, I'm making 15%. So to your point, they may make a silly adjustment with their money and put it into something that they think is making 12% when in fact that's what it did in the past. The other thing I was going to point out to you, and I wanted to get your opinion on, again, in the Wall Street Journal, there was an article about how equities and economies have been diverging. And it talked mostly about how economic growth in the stock markets across the developed and emerging worlds don't necessarily add up. For most of the past decade, the markets of developed countries have went higher, even though their economies have struggled with sluggish growth. But by contrast, emerging market economies have grown, and according to this article, dramatically, but their markets have been dismal. And they gave a couple of examples, like U.S. stocks have climbed over 76% in the last decade, outperforming India's market by more than 10 percentage points. Over the same period of time, India's economy grew 89% versus just 14% for the U.S. You go down to, let's say, Russia. Russia's economy, for example, has grown just 6.5%, barely faster than Japan's. But yet, despite posting slightly better growth than Japan's, Russia's market is down 50%, while Japan's is up over 46%. So my question is, and I don't want people to get sucked into a certain sector economy or any type of investment here, but there is a divergence between the economies and the markets. Give us a little insight to that.
Yeah, there most certainly is. Now, number one, typically what we're looking at the economy is to see that things are growing and improving, and that you expect for what has been going on to continue to go on and maybe even get a little bit better. Now, off of that evaluation, then you start coming over to the stock world and start looking at individual sectors or individual companies and saying, okay, hey, if this economy can continue to grow at this pace, then what can we expect their sales to continue to do? What's going to happen with the margins, and try and extrapolate whether a stock is at a good value or not. But here's the reality. Regardless of the economy, if everybody decides this one stock is the hottest stock to own moving forward and everybody buys that stock's going to go up, even if the economy went down. Now, typically, if the economy's doing poorly, you don't very often find that type of a herd mentality in which everybody thinks this one stock is going to continue to make a whole bunch of money, even though the economy is doing poorly. But the reality is, what drives stock prices up for the short run is the dollar flows, the people out there buying that stock. And they may buy that regardless of what they see going on in the economy. So, yes, there are times that there is a disconnect. Now, those disconnects don't last forever. Eventually, reality begins to set in. And if you do have a weak economy, eventually on those quarterly earnings reports, then eventually you're going to start to see some weakness in the earnings from those individual companies. And then there's kind of a reset and a check back. The other thing, like you talked about, when you start talking internationally, you know, you look at different countries, they have different sets of skills, of natural resources, of things that they are good at. That's why international trade works. Okay. So in Russia's case, mm-hmm. Hey, oil, that's a big driving force behind them. Well, guess what? Here in the last few years, oil's gone from $150 a barrel all the way down to the upper 20s, has now bounced back into the 50s. So even though Russia's economy may be doing okay, the primary sector that is exposed to the Russian stock market is predominantly energy. Well, energy hasn't done as well while the economy has done well. So, yes, you can't just automatically look at some of those things and say, oh, the economy's good, therefore this stock market is good, from an international perspective, one internet invest overseas. And no different than even here, it's not an automatic guarantee that because the economy is doing well, that all stocks do well. There are individual companies that are doing good and bad. Like right now, retail is a great example. We've mentioned this a few times in regards to Amazon and the Amazon effect, as people are calling it right now. the consumer is spending plenty of money, but yet when you watch the quarterly earnings that just came out for the third quarter, there are certain retail companies that did absolutely horrible with their quarterly earnings call. Their sales went down dramatically. That doesn't mean that the consumer's not spending money. It just means the consumer is now spending money in different ways than what he used to. So sometimes we have to make adjustments in evaluating where the opportunities lie based on a good economy. Now, don't take that to mean this is the new economy. It's a new dynamic. Every time people profess, this is new, it's different this time, it comes back to bite you, and you find out that, you know what, it's a little bit different, but not that much to make a big change. Things seem to always be somewhat related. So even though they don't do exactly what they did in the past, they do things very similar to what they've done in the past based on similar economic conditions.
Sounds extremely complicated, Hot Rod, but that's good because that gives us a job, which that makes me happy. Hey, real quick before I let you go, you mentioned Amazon. I was looking for just a little storage thing that we put in our front closet that we could put gloves in and hats. So because I got a little frustrated the other morning when I went to try to find something, and I felt like I was pulling out, you know, the Goodwill commercial when they have, so
we went through the closet,
and the whole closet out. So I thought, you know what, let's go hunt for something. So we got the measurements, and we went to three or four different places to try to find something, your normal stops. I'm like, you know what, I don't know. We're not, I mean, 2 hours into it, I'm like, okay, let's just give up. I'll go home and look around on Amazon, see if I can find something. So I get home, look around on Amazon, in about 15 minutes, found something that appeared, and I can't touch it, feel it, you know, kick it or whatever, but it looked pretty reasonable, and let's order it. Boom, I ordered it, and it said, okay, it was free shipping because we're part of the Prime thing, and it'll show up on Wednesday. So this was Sunday afternoon, and my wife said, hey, that thing showed up at our house today. I mean, that's why 50% of commerce is done online now. It's easy. And if it doesn't fit, I don't like it, guess what? I stick it back in the box, put a piece of tape on it, and ship it right back out my door. So I feel bad for the UPS and FedEx drivers, but for us consumers, it's pretty cool. The other thing I was going to ask you, because this show is going to play on Saturday morning before the big old bucket game, any predictions for the Indiana-Purdue game? It's going to be, kicking off in about 3 hours, 10, 11, 12, 2 hours after this show completes.
Yep, I'm gonna have to go with the Hoosiers. It's a big game for both teams. Both teams need the win to get guaranteed bowl eligibility. I think what benefits the Hoosiers this time around, while Purdue is much improved over last year with the new coach that I think is going to do some good things for them, the schedule that we played was so heavily front-end loaded and so tough with top 25 teams that I think that we're a little more prepared than maybe what their schedule got them for. But the reality is it's Indiana-Purdue. Throw the records out the books. Come to play, because both teams are going to get after it and play hard. And for the first time in a long time, this game means something to both teams.
So I'll be up at Ross-Ade Stadium rooting on the Hoosiers. So I'm with you, Hot Rod. I'm going to go with the Hoosiers. But how could you not, right? How could I sit here and say, well, I think Purdue's going to win? Hey, if that
That's
happened,
exactly right. Even if I thought Purdue was going to win,
you wouldn't
I'd never
say it
on air.
That's exactly right. Hey, man, I hope you have a good rest of the week, and I'll see you on Monday morning.
Thanks. Thank you, Dave.
See you. Bye. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about someone who's turned 20 years old. It's the Roth IRA. We're going to talk about how the Roth is now 20, and is it being utilized the way that I think everyone thought it would be utilized? This is Your Money with David Hayes. Put a quarter in him, folks. That's what I say about Hot Rod Holloway. Energizer Bunny. You know, we had a new client come in, new prospective client come into the office this past week, and I said, well, let me introduce you to Rod. Yeah, he can talk to you about this or that or the other. So Rod comes in, and it was a real simple question. Explain the difference between a mutual fund and an exchange traded fund. Sounds pretty simple, right? I could explain it in 2 or 3 minutes. About 20 minutes later, Hot Rod was leaving the room, and the lady looked at me and she said, wow, he's passionate. Yes, he is. And I always describe Rod as that he loves what he does, and that if he didn't do it for a living, he would do it for fun. And I think if you're looking for anyone to do something for you, wouldn't it be nice to have someone that would do it for fun just because they love it so much? I mean, that's the kind of passion that Hot Rod brings, so we appreciate him for that. But yeah, you put a quarter in him, folks, and he'll just go and go and go. All right, as the ball drops on this year's New Year's Eve, don't forget to raise a glass to the Roth IRA. January 1 is going to mark the 20th birthday of this very key retirement account. In the past two decades, Roths have grown to more than $660 billion in assets. That's according to Investment Company Institute of America. But as popular as they become, they're still greatly underused. Roth IRAs only totaled about 8% of the nearly $8 trillion that are held in IRAs overall at the end of 2016, according to the ICI. Now, this huge disparity largely is a result of rollovers. Most employers' plans, which can be in the millions of dollars, when they retire, roll into an IRA. Most Roth IRAs instead remain funded predominantly by smaller contributions that currently can't exceed $5,500 a year, or if you're over 50, $6,500. Now, but here's the other thing. In 2015, 85% of newly opened traditional IRAs were funded by rollovers, and while the figure was only 15% for new Roth IRAs. Now, here's the thing. You can roll over Roth contributions in your 401k, which is a fairly new phenomenon, to a Roth IRA. If you have after-tax dollars in a retirement account, that can be rolled over to a Roth IRA. Not all plans allow for after-tax contributions. And what I mean by that is you've maxed out, boom, in June or July. You want to keep putting money in the plan. Where does it go? It goes to after-tax contributions. If you build those up over time, those can then be rolled over into a Roth. And I've seen some pretty massive Roth IRA created because of that, those after-tax contributions. Now, the Roth IRA is kind of like a half-brother to the traditional IRA. Same mom, different dad. It was created kind of as in a mirror image in many ways to the traditional IRAs. Again, the traditional IRA was generally deductible when you put it in, and then when distributions came out, they were taxed at ordinary tax rates. Whereas the Roth is the complete reverse. Contributions go in after tax, distributions later in retirement are tax-free. Now, folks are pretty greedy. They like to get that tax deduction up front. They like to get that tax deferral up front. But Roth IRAs will be able to give you so much flexibility in retirement if you have a lot of money in that. If you only have a few thousand bucks, you're not going to be able to do much with that. Because here's the deal with the devil that we've all made. They say, okay, go ahead and put the money in today and don't pay any tax. And then when you take it out, we'll tell you how much taxes you're going to owe. Because we have no idea what the tax rates are going to be 15, 20, 30 years from now. My math tells me it will be higher. My math tells me that if we get some tax reform that goes through here in the next, you know, few months, that we do it under budget reconciliation, which means we have 10 years of possible lower taxes to do a lot of tax planning. And that's why we've been hitting that so hard here on the show, to be locked and loaded and ready to go. So when it happens, you're not sitting there, you know, 8 years into it thinking, oh, well, no one told me about this opportunity. Yeah, I mean, the fact is that taxes are probably going to go up at some point to pay for the things we've already promised, Medicare, Social Security, you know all the different things that we've talked about here on the show. We have unfunded pension liabilities all across the country that need to be funded. Who's going to pay for that? So taxes will go up at some point. So having money in the Roth is the best thing ever, because later on you won't pay any taxes. Now, some will say, well, but what if they change the rules on Roth? They could. But they're not going to do it in a retroactive form. If you did all of these Roth conversions now, pay the taxes now, and that's what I think is the big deterrent, is that either, one, people aren't educated on making Roth conversions now, paying the tax off now so you never to pay it ever, ever, ever again, or they just don't like paying the tax. Now, you do have to pay the tax on the conversions, and it is a little bit painful, but just like a shot, once it's over, and you move on, and then you're good for it. It's like a vaccination. I mean, that's really a good way to look at it. I'm going to take a vaccination. It's going to hurt like heck, and then guess what? I don't have mumps. I don't have measles. I don't have all these other crazy things that could happen to me. So once again, a Roth IRA is paying tax on the seed money, but not the harvest. And I've said this in classes. I've said it on the radio. Who wouldn't do that? Who, as a farmer, if given the choice to pay taxes on the harvest that came out of the ground or the seed that went into the ground, which one would he rather pay the taxes on? It's the seed money, not the harvest. A Roth IRA is exactly the same thing. So as I encourage you, inspire you to do what you know you need to do, do it. I mean, do it. But do it with caution. Do it with advice. Don't just do it willy-nilly. Because there can be unintended consequences of excess income in any given year. So you want to be cautious about that. I want you to understand there's no minimum distributions on Roth IRAs. You can still contribute to Roth IRAs after 70 and a half, even if you, as long as you have some earned income. You need a landing ground for Roth contributions in a 401k. And if you're a young person, even if you're making good money and you have kids, I can almost assure you that 20 years from now, when those kids are gone and you're in your mid to late 50s, you're probably making more money than you are today. And I hope you are. I sure hope you are. So why would I defer tax into a later environment where I'm going to be making more money and I'm probably going to pay more taxes when I could put that money in now, pay a little bit of tax, and then have all that tax-free later? So I think that it should almost be mandated that young people start putting money in the Roth, and then they would have to opt out and go the other way, rather than auto-enroll them into this traditional side where they're going to, you know, set themselves up for having this big tax time bomb that could go off in their face later. So use this information to do what you know you should be doing, and that's build tax diversification. We talk about investment diversification all the time, but what about tax diversification? You should have money that you've paid all the taxes on, some money you've paid some of the tax on, some money you've paid none of the tax on, because then you control your future, not somebody else. So hopefully that encourages you to do the right things with your money, with your tax allocation. And listen, this thing's 20 years old, and only 8% of IRAs are in Roth. I'd love to see it at 50%, but how do you get there? You're going to have to do some conversions, and when tax reform goes through, hopefully that'll give you the math to do it, knowing that later on taxes are going to have to go up. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, some more year-end stuff that we'll go through quickly and then wrap up the big show. Hopefully you're enjoying it. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I did an interview with Fox just a day or two ago, I believe, and they said that the article would be released this weekend. So, you know, if you check your news feeds and you see a article that's written on the differences. Whoa, that music just fired up quickly. If the differences between 401ks and IRAs, we did a great interview with a terrific young writer on that topic. And, you know, went through all kinds of different reasons why you have money in a 401k or sometimes an IRA. But also she said kind of at the end, hey, what are some year-end things that you should consider? And, of course, I went through Roth conversions. I went through, 529 college savings plans. Those have to be done before the end of the year. You have a little more than 30 days to get that done. We talked about gifting, you know, using qualified charitable distributions, money coming directly from the IRA. You have to be 70 and a half, but you can give up to $100,000 from an IRA directly to a charity, and it's not included in your taxable income. And if you are 70 and a half, you have RMDs, required distributions, it would satisfy that as well. I also made a few other suggestions, like, you know, rebalancing your accounts, like Rod mentioned earlier. But then also, you know, things like later on, after Christmas, reviewing your estate plan during that slow week, maybe reviewing your coverage on your home, like your homeowner's coverage. But be careful, because I had something happen to me. I talked about this in the class we taught at Ivy Tech last week. So I'm always like, okay, you should buy insurance for the things you can't otherwise cover yourself. Makes sense? Nod your head yes. Then I talk about deductibles. Well, can you afford a $200 storm door that gets blown off? Yeah, I can afford that. I can pay for that out of pocket. Okay, well, what about, you know, a $1,000 issue at your home? Could you pay for that? Some siding got tore off, maybe a few shingles. Yeah, I could pay for that. I don't really want to, but I could. What about $2,500? Could you pay for something that happened at your house that cost $2,500? The answer is, yeah, but man, I sure really don't want to. Well, here's the thing. A lot of the insurance cost that you pay is built on those smaller and more frequent claims. So if you back your deductible up to around $2,500, you can save a significant amount of money on your homeowner's insurance. Makes sense. Taught this for years. Then all of a sudden, I get my benefit statement or coverage statement in the mail, and I'm looking through it. It was a new thing they started doing with the company I was with. And it said, your deductible is $500. And I'm like, wait a second. So I called my buddy, and I said, who's my insurance agent, said, hey, I need to get this jacked up $2,500. It's going to save me money. Yes, you're right. Let's do it. That night, I swear, I should have checked the weather. I walked outside to watch the storm come in. I love to do that. I had a cold beer in my hand, just like any good redneck would. I'm watching the storm come in, and all of a sudden, the lightning picked up, the wind picked up, and I heard the loudest crash that I've ever heard. And I look up, and it's the big tree at the edge of my driveway that fell, busted the pillars at the end of my driveway, busted the lights, and I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. So I called my buddy and said, hey, did you get that change? Oh, yeah, I took care of it. I told him what happened. He was laughing hysterically. He said, I wish I could change it back, but I can't. So long story short, the repairs came in right at $2,650, $150 over my deductible. I didn't worry about claiming that. It wasn't worth it. So here's my moral to this story. Great idea, terrible timing. So hey, there's a lot of these things that happen in the financial world, and changing your coverages is one of them. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap up the show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Great idea, bad timing. How many things have occurred like that in your life? Hey, if you don't forget that if you are a state employee, you work for the counties, you are a teacher, and you'd like to attend the Ivy Tech Center for Lifelong Learning's two-day course on retirement readiness for Indiana public employees, please give us a call over at our office, 334-3190, or email us at cfci.us, and just contact us through the website. I don't care who you contact, but contact somebody. We will get you the information to sign up. It's $15 to attend. You get two big workbooks. There's going to be a special section that's about an hour long just on the NPERS retirement rules and changes, calculating what you're going to get out of your benefit, how do you get the most out of it, what to do with your annuity savings account. If you're a state employee, you know what I'm talking about. How to choose the right survivorship options at the time of application. That's an irrevocable decision. If you mess that one up, boys, you mess it all up. And then also how to coordinate the pension with your annuity savings account, with your 403B, with your spouse's stuff if you're married, with Social Security. And this is going to be a fantastic class for $15. Are you kidding me? We have to limit it to 50. In the last look, we were really, really close. So if you'd like to attend that class, you're a state employee, please shoot us an email. We'll send you the enrollment form, and we can get you all hooked up. Just $15. So folks, listen, I hope you had a fantastic, fantastic Thanksgiving. I hope that Eastern Green won the state championship, even though I predicted they probably would not. It's Saturday morning. I recorded this show on Wednesday afternoon, and I'm going to be headed up to Rossage Stadium to watch the Hoosiers play the Boilermakers for not only the bucket, but also for a bowl bid, which will probably be Detroit or Nashville, probably not back out to New York for the Pinstripe Bowl, but you never know. And hopefully it's on a day that I can go. So hopefully everyone had a fantastic Thanksgiving, a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week, everyone. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.